welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary
with Professor Jennifer Curtin. Morena, Jennifer, how are you?
Morena, I'm good, thank you.
Hey, it's great to speak to you this morning. We've got three very big and quite diverse topics to talk about today. We are going to be chatting about how the, 2 years of the mosque attacks anniversary, which was on Monday, has been going in terms of the way that the government's responded to the Royal Commission of Inquiry. We also are going to be talking a bit about the deportation of a minor from Australia to New Zealand and what that is all meaning for our trans-Tasman relationship. And then I also want to talk a little bit about the London police's response to the vigil for Sarah Everard, who was a woman who was murdered recently over there. So some three pretty big topics just to get stuck into on a Wednesday morning. Let's start with the Royal Commission of Inquiry outcomes on the mosque attacks. Where are we at with this? What's the government actually actioning at the moment? And do you think it's enough? Do you think it's being received well?
Yeah, I think the government clearly used this anniversary as an opportunity to highlight some of the things that they were putting in place 2 years on, but also more recently from the Royal Commission. And so they've dedicated some funding to a couple of measures that are aimed at bringing more representation and voices from ethnic communities into informing the way the state sector builds its response more broadly. Mm-hmm. But I think the challenge with this is, for example, they've given $1 million over 3 years to the what they're calling the Engagement Response Fund. But on the weekend, the president of the Islamic Women's Council, you know, really highlighted what a paltry sum this is. So when you break it down over 3 years, that's $330,000 a year to bring 60,000 people from the Muslim community together in order to be able to engage with this issue and the aftermath and all the other challenges like no ACC money and all of that. And she basically said that counts for one cup of coffee. Mm. That's it for those people. So really, it's not, and a lot of the initiatives seem to be directed to, you know, helping our ethnic communities become more embedded and mainstream society, but it's not really clear that they're doing enough joined up work to address racism. Mm. And, you know, really what we know from Human Rights Commission's reports, like ongoing reports, is that, you know, racism is a clear and present, I don't know, danger, if you like, in our community for many who come from minority backgrounds, particularly Muslim communities. So they've taken some baby steps, but it's really clear that from the Muslim community at least, that the timing of this implementation needs addressing. There are still inadequate resources for the trauma experienced by witnesses and family members and the funding for that, and that there's just not enough coordinated, joined-up response going on sufficiently rapidly, if you like.
So how does the government get held to account on the targets that they have set themselves, but then also on, as you mentioned there, these targets that the actual community has, you know, which go further than what the government's laid out? How does anything happen from this point on? How do we make sure that gets moved further beyond what they've laid out?
Well, I have to say, the Islamic Women's Council are amazing advocates for this cause, and they're constantly working to ensure that this doesn't drop off the public radar. And obviously there are journalists out there doing really important work. But we would want to see a more structured government doing its own, holding itself to account.
Mm-hmm.
But also we really need the opposition parties in Parliament to be stepping up. So even though this government has the majority, you know, the place for this holding government to account on some of these things is still the Parliament.
Mm.
And it can't just be the Greens doing the work on this. It needs to be all the parties that are not in government calling the, you know, holding the government to account and keeping this issue on the agenda so that they feel pressured to work more holistically, but also in a speedy way.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what's happening with our situation with Australia at the moment, in particular around the deportation of a minor, a 15-year-old, from Australia to New Zealand. Andrew Beecroft, the Children's Commissioner, has said it's a breach of rights and he's deeply concerned about it, particularly since he's had a briefing, he's become even more concerned about the situation. We're also seeing, I guess, some sort of like slanging matches going on as well between people in the Australian Parliament and some of our own politicians. It seems like it's a very tense situation. If we break it down and talk first about this case, what's happened here? How have we got a minor deported from Australia to New Zealand?
Right, so there are these 501 visas, which the current Australian government, so it was the Liberal government, implemented back in 2014, I think, or 2015, where, you know, people who cannot become, you know, it's a very difficult pathway to residency, can have their visas cancelled at any time and are deported. So we've seen this deportation policy in place for some years now. But in 2018, the Australian government then signalled that it really wanted to change the law so it could start deporting under 18. And they haven't been able to up until this point, they've tried to deport two 17-year-olds before now, and actually Andrew Little and Winston Peters in the last term went and challenged that, and that deportation order was cancelled. Mm-hmm. And Greg Barnes is this fabulous human rights lawyer in Australia who's constantly battling the Australian government over these laws that they put in place. But this time they were able to get the 15-year-old deported to New Zealand. Now, this is immigration rules are domestic policy issues. It's, even though we talk about right. this as a trans-Tasman diplomatic row, we have to remember that this is Australian domestic politics. We've seen them, you know, be harsh on, you know, lots of refugees and asylum seekers are being deported all the time, families. It's just this is a populist policy that this government has been championing, and it's political. So they're looking to go to an early election this year. This government in Australia, the Liberal government in Australia, has a lot of problems with its own internal party around rape allegations in the culture of Parliament. And this is like a dog whistle issue. Peter Dutton is known for these things and this way of handling immigration, and they do their focus groups, and there's a segment of the Australian population that is quite fine with this.
So what's the, I guess, the recourse for New Zealand? How do we, I guess, respond to this? Because this creates a situation for us as well, and when you have a minor caught up in the crossfire, it becomes a lot more fraught as well. What's the next step, or what do you think is going to happen now?
Well, you know, the Prime Minister hasn't really said very much. She's clearly wanting more information before she starts using strong words against the Prime Minister of Australia again on these issues. Nanaia Mahut has clearly been a bit more in the loop on this one, separately to the trash talk that was coming from Peter Dutton on the broader issue of deportations. But when it comes to the issue of minors, I think, you know, Gollritz, Gamarangan and Andrew Beecroft's work is going to be really important, and linking up with the likes of Greg Barnes and Rebecca Holt and others in Australia who are seeking to raise the issue of children's rights and breaching UN conventions in this regard is one way forward on this broader issue. The fact that they've moved to deport minors really changes things, I think. You're right. And it gives perhaps a little more leverage. The government may not do this, but those third-party advocate groups and minor parties and others in Australia could be leveraging that broader international dimension to this issue.
Well, I'm sure we'll be able to touch back on this one in the coming weeks, because it's, as you sort of mentioned,
yeah,
there, an
crazy,
evolving situation. Let's talk very briefly, though. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, but I do want to talk a bit about what's happening over in London at the moment after the awful murder of Sarah Everard by a police officer. Accused murder of Sarah Everard. We have seen some really quite fraught situations happening over there. There was a vigil held. People are saying, you know, quite strongly it was a vigil, not a protest. And these women, these people who were at this vigil, were kettled by the cops, which is when the police basically stop people from leaving and kind of create a perimeter around where the gathering is. It's a very controversial policing tactic used a lot in 2011 around the London riots, and is, you know, always been controversial for its potential breaches of human rights. Now, this has been a moment, I think, where we're perhaps seeing middle class and white people recognising some of the ongoing challenges with the way that policing is happening over in the UK. And we can see echoes of that in New Zealand. What do you think are going to be some of the fallouts from what we have seen happening in the UK in the last week?
Well, I think this is something else to be talked about in a much bigger sense, because this has been problematic from the start and replicates what we saw in Australia, where the police response, even in the first instance, is to say to women that they shouldn't go out at night and that they have a personal responsibility to look after themselves. And that was the response from police in Melbourne in 2018 when we saw something similar happen to an woman artist there. So there's that. And then, you know, the Reclaim the Nights group went to the courts to say they wanted to hold this vigil, and the courts refused to make a ruling and left the discretion with the police, and the police refused to have conversations with Reclaim the Nights about how to manage this vigil in a way that was sensitive. And they had their own stewards, they were all ready to kind of, and they publicly cancelled it. But there were women who turned up to Clapham Common to remember this woman and to reclaim the night. And the tactics were, it's quite clear from the outrage, not just from people on the side of the women, but from conservative side of politics as well, are saying that the police were really, really overstepped the mark here. But it's interesting that it is this middle-class white moment, if you like, that's pushing the awareness of this more broadly, and the issue of women feeling unsafe at night and being told to sort of curfew themselves. It's even having repercussions here, with Mike Hosking suggesting that men shouldn't, in a way, change their behaviour, that, you know, we're all getting too woke on this. But I think it will have ongoing implications for policing, because they're going to have a full inquiry into it. And it's, like you said, something that we'll have to have another conversation about. But it really is concerning more generally about the culture of the police there.
I think you definitely see a facet of the population who maybe hasn't been thinking about how policing happens or how police tactics roll out, definitely having their eyes opened when you've got someone like the Duchess of Cambridge at this vigil and also speaking about how she had personally felt unsafe walking in the afternoons in London. I think maybe it reminds me almost of when you know, the Springbok tour here in New Zealand was a moment for Pākehā to understand how policing was affecting parts of the population that maybe they hadn't recognised before. So again, this is a conversation we could probably talk about all day, but unfortunately that is all the time we have got. Thank you so much, Professor Jennifer Curtin. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. We'll talk to
Thanks,
you again
Rachel.
In a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
All right. Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with Professor